So we have no drilling today, so it should be much better. Thank God, right?
They did the cleanup like remarkably quick.
Yes, especially for by YU standards.
Right, very fast. 2 days. I've never seen anything like that before.
So brief review of what I wanted. We're going to come back to this today a little bit. So we spent some time on Tuesday discussing the COVID Shurim's distinction between a Kinyan and a Shibud. And we had a very nice back and forth about what his position actually is on the relationship between the two. We know that Shibud is weaker than Kinyan. On the other hand, he views a Shibud as a... So, on the other hand, he views that a Kinyan is not sufficient to generate the master's powers to boss around the Eved or the Poel. So we point out that Buchanan has this peculiar view where he's right on the relationship between Kinyan and Shibud, yet he has a strange conception of Kinyan. Sound familiar? Yeah. Then we saw the Ritva. The Ritva called a Shibud a Chatzi Kinyan or a Kinyan L'Chatzayin. I pointed out that's consistent with the Rabbi Chanan in viewing a Shibud as weaker than a Kinyan. But we had a nice back and forth here trying to determine whether the Ritva's classifying the Shibud as merely quantitatively different from a Kinyan, does that cut the other way as well and reflect that there is an intrinsic relationship between the two and it's just a matter of degree in distinguishing between them? But a Shibud maybe is a quasi-Kinyan in his view. So we had this nice back and forth. My own view was to try to argue within the Ritva that Shibud is weaker and qualitatively distinct from a Kinyan. Sounds familiar? Yes? Yeah, your faithful reproduction of yesterday's, of Tuesday's discussion?
Certainly a summary. But...
Okay. Yeah. A faithful summary? Good. Now, just coming back to Rabbi Chanan for 1 second, Rabbi Chanan said that when it comes to a Kinyan, that's real ownership, so you automatically acquire whatever the thing that you own acquires. That's like what makes a Kinyan distinct from a Shibud. Whereas in a mere Shibud, the Poel would have a duty to fork over whatever he acquires or whatever he produces, but the master doesn't automatically own it. Right? So a Kinyan is automatic ownership, a Shibud is a mere duty or a claim right in Hofeld's sense to pass over the proceeds. From there, we saw the Yushalmi, at least as interpreted by the Machane Ephraim and the Nesivis. The Yushalmi had two deos about whether a poel is gufo kanoi. And we had the Ha'ara within Shitas Rav, who held Ein Yisrael konin zeh zeh, that what? What was distinctive about the way the Yushalmi presented that view? Anybody remember? Leib, do you remember? No? So what was distinctive about the way the Yushalmi presented the Yair?
I mean,
so there is an ambiguity, but what about in the way the Yushalmi flushes out the nafkamina? Daiti derab bein poel bein balabayas yachal lachzer bo. So Eitan pointed out that there's a certain reciprocity here. Meaning what? What was the reciprocity? That's right. So gufo kanoi cuts both ways. It means that the poel is acquired to the balabayas, but it also means that the balabayas is some way bound to the poel in a stronger sense.
Well, if you're anything, it's only
what's that?
In this context, if you're showing anything, you only have to be
between the two views, correct. But the point is that gufo kanoi is not just about the ownership status of the Eved, it's also about the obligations that the master has to the Eved.
Is there any way to read it? It's a little
or to like, the poel, I should say.
It's a little bit like a weird way of reading it, but then I read Rav's statement that's Kili Bene Salamadim. It doesn't say like Bula Fatimabadim, it doesn't make that full drasha the way it's appearing in the Sea. Is that just like a full drasha that any self quoting dead to that? Anyone to read
like even if it's not Avdus.
Not just not Avdus, but then it goes both ways, as in both if employer can own and contract employees and out of the office, but also if the employee then has certain power over the employer, that also gets that problem.
Yes, that's very interesting.
That's why
Rob
and Sheeta is that they both get involved there because you can't have strong.
Hi, it's Cole.
Hey, Cole. Welcome. I think that's a very interesting reading of the Yushalmi. That's initially how I read it. Ein Yisrael Konin Zeh Zeh is bilateral.
Yeah, there's like a type of like.
Right. It's like the Eved can't have a kinyan in the Rav, and the Rav can't have a kinyan in the Master.
Yeah,
and
it's almost like it's like strong contractual obligations.
Yeah, it's
but
like, so it's, yeah, it's a very interesting point. I mean, what do the rest of you make of Yoni's observation? I originally read the Yushalmi as making that point. Now I'm less convinced, because I think it just means that Ein Yisrael Konin Zezeh means a Balabayis. Any Yisrael, any arbitrary Yisrael, can't have a property right over any other one.
Yeah, you're reading in light of Bumpus.
But it's right, but it's unilateral, meaning, exactly.
Yeah, you're reading in light of Bumpus, yeah, it's
Yisrael. Yeah, it's really interesting. So you're saying, like, the next line of Yushalmi, Al Daitei Derab, Bein Poel, Bein Balabayis, Yochel Achzerbo, is almost evidence for this bilateral read of the first line.
Yeah.
Right? That if there is a Kinyan Balabayis Bit Poel, then there's also a reciprocal Kinyan that the Poel has in the Balabayis.
And that's what Rob's pushing against.
Yeah. So I think that's a very interesting view, if that's what the Yushalmi is getting at. I'm just not sure. See, the person who goes in that direction, I think the person who comes closest to that is the Igros Moshe. In that Choshe Mishpat Chilek Aleph Simen Pei Aleph. Did you see that? Anybody see that Igros Moshe yet? No, Levi didn't. You see it yet? We're not going to get to it today anyway, but Ramosh is trying to make the case that if there is a Kenyan Poel, if there is a Kenyan Haguf in a Poel, then it would mean that the Balabayis is correlatively obligated to give him Melacha. See, because that Ramosh is talking about a tshuva where I hired Yoni to work, and then I had so much work to do that I hire Yair as well. And then the demand for my supplies, let's say, goes down, and I only have enough income to hire one worker. So Ramosha wants to know, is there like some claim that Yoni has that he was there first, that I have to fire Yair and keep him? As opposed to saying, like, now you'll both get like a half salary. And Ramosha thinks it's totally on this question of whether a poel is gufo kanoi. Because if it was Gufo Kanoi, then it's like I have reciprocal duties to you or something. I mean, we'll see that in the Rav Moshe. But I think that follows from this idea that you view a kinyan not just as a kinyan that a Balabayis has in the Poel, but a reciprocal kinyan going backwards from the Poel to the Balabayis.
Yeah.
Now, if that's the reading of the Yushalmi, by the way, and that's the view, then this is a very different kind of a kinyan than our standard property rights kinyan. A standard property right kinyan, I have a kinyan in the table, so I own the table. The table doesn't have any reverse kinyan in me.
What's in the table is the person.
Good. So you say, well, maybe there's something different about kinyanim with persons. This gets to Yakir's point from Tuesday. What was Yakir's point with respect to this? Are there something special about persons? You remember the Yakir discussion? If only Yakir were here. Gabe, do you remember Yakir's point?
I made two different points. The first one was that...
Oh, it was in the Rebbe Chanan. That's what it was. Yakir's point in the Rebbe Chanan from Tuesday was that...
When you have a kinyan in an object,
that was Yakir's point, right?
Yeah.
That when you have a kinyan in an object... That kinyan allows you to push it around and determine what's done with it, right? So that's why you don't need a separate shibud in addition to your kinyan with respect to objects. So maybe you can make a similar point here within Yoni's point that maybe when you have a kinyan in a poel, it's just fundamentally different from having a kinyan in an object, this is what Yair is saying, such that the poel has a reverse kinyan in the balabayas as well, right? I think that makes a lot of sense. But we'll have to look. We'll have to look for more evidence. But your reading of the Yushalmi is a nice way to ground that view, especially in conjunction with Yakir's point.
I understand those words, but can you explain like what the nachmina or like kinyan would be? How does that kinyan manifest in the Balabayis responsibilities towards the Eved?
Yeah, I mean the reverse kinyan. Yeah. So I think one way of cashing it out is in terms of the Rav Moshe question. In the long tshuva that we didn't yet get to, but it's on the source sheet, which is that if I have a kinyan haguf in Yoni that I own his services or something, then he has like a reverse claim against me that I provide him with services so that he can make money. So you see, If it's like a mere agreement or something, you might say, I hire Yoni that, you know, if he ends up working for 10 hours, then I'll pay him $100. But if there's a kinyan, then not only do I have, let's say, a claim against Yoni that he in fact performed the service and can't back out, but that Yoni has a reverse claim that I actually give him service to do. I can't back out and say, like, oh, there's no work for you to do, I'm only going to pay you for 5 hours. Right? He's fully entitled to demand the full payment from me.
Isn't that kind of similar to the... One second.
Cool. Cool. Let me just see if Gabe got the... Gabe, do you get that point, or...
Yeah, I got that point. That was helpful.
I think that's what the reciprocal kinyan would be. So there's like an anchor going from the Baal Bayis to the Poel, but then also an anchor coming from the Poel and grounding or hooking into the Baal Bayis. I think that would be the bilateral view. Cole, you wanted to say something?
I'm not gonna fight too hard for this, but you might say that like the you wanted to go over the motion draft that the analogous that the analog and the obligation to provide work or to provide work, whatever it is the iser baltasha that like the analog to abuse it in
right.
The case of an object.
Yeah, maybe, but I think in the case of Schiras Polen, it would be stronger than just Baltashkes. It's like a claim right that he has against you. Yeah, that stems from... Correct. That stems from the Kenyan. Okay, that's what I wanted...
Those kinds, though, would be, like, you know, teleological. Those claims would be...
Correct. Yeah, here, you have a... Oh, sorry, Gabe?
I found that Rob's drasha kind of not and hard to accept, but it seems clear that the pasuk of please kili b'nei shalavadim is coming to protect the eved, not protect the adon. In context of the pasukim, it's not really
consumer
driving.
Right.
That was an interesting drasha.
Yeah, very interesting drasha. And I mean, the next line in the Yushalmi, as you can see what I'm highlighting here, it makes it clear that it cuts both ways, right? Because he says, oh, the nafkamina of the view is that the Baal Bayis could be chozer without penalty. Right? So it's once there's no kinyanim, both sides have an easy exit.
Well, I think you've also been like, we're also kind of used to the Kamara Darsha and the Pokemon Seos. That's why we're so used to thinking about
the Poel's right.
The Poel's like hidden in the advent.
Yeah.
But I think, like, before, if you look at it before you look at these things, like, you could have imagined, like, who is the Eved here is not as clear. Like, in some ways, the employer also is an Eved.
Like, Kone Eved Latzmo, Kone Rav Latzmo, as I'll say.
And then there's certain responsibilities he has also, which
make him... Yeah, so there's just, like, reciprocal obligations.
I mean, ask any CEO, he also is an Eved. Shareholders, employees,
so... Yeah, I don't know if they would characterize it that way, you know. I mean, maybe, like, a real left-leaning CEO would say that way. Right. Well, they complain because they don't think they ought to have any responsibilities. I hear.
And we've run into this question, and we've run into it before with the context of the structure, right? Does the formulation in Yisrael, Kohen Zed Zed, imply the existence of these strong relationships, or the denial of these strong relationships?
Correct.
There can't be,
right.
You know, a Poel, serious obligation. It has to be.
Right, so there can't be kinyanim, there's just got to be something weaker.
Right, and in fact, in that formulation, then the real one actually believes in stronger relationships that exist.
Correct, there is a stronger one, just there's a special right of exit.
Right.
At least the way the Machane Ephraim takes it. Good, so we saw two approaches we saw both the Machane Ephraim and the Nesivis make the claim that the Machlokas and the Yushalmi is Machlokas about whether Poel Gufo Kanoi, and the Nesivis proceeded to explain that you could use this machlokas in Yushalmi to explain machlokas between the ktsos and the shach. So you'll recall the ktsos and the shach had a debate, what happens when you hire a worker. Let me see if I could actually show you guys. I don't know. Well, the ktsos and the shach had a machlokas, what happens when you hire a worker for $10 an hour at 10 hours and the worker breaches 5 hours in. Right? Does everybody remember this case? Yeah? And at the time of breach, the price of labor goes down to $8 an hour, and labor is readily available. Right? So how much is the Poel entitled to for compensation? So just to review very quickly, what did we say? Anybody remember the views?
The shop thinks that it we should be entitled to, you know, the half compensation that he earned, but not the half that he did not earn.
That's right. So the shop says that the Poel gets the $5 an hour for the, sorry, the $10 an hour for the 5 hours that he worked. So he gets $50.
Right.
The underlying theory that we said is a theory like quantum merit. So the Poel gets paid for the actual benefits that he conferred on the Balabais. That was the theory. That was the shock view. And that's very intuitive, right? The Sos's view was what?
Was sort of analogized to your own kesef.
Exactly.
You need to get out of the rest of your obligation.
So the Sos says the Poel pays. The Poel gets paid $60, so he gets a little bit of a windfall for backing out. And what was the justification for that? What was the? I understand that Tos appeals to Giron Kesef, but give me the more fundamental justification, assuming there is one.
We say a kind of vuvo kanoe that, you know, this kinyan already, you know, implies the transfer of money. You know, he bought me for this time with this money, so I'm entitled to the entirety of the money. And if I fail to live up to the services, I have to compensate whatever cost him.
I think that's exactly right. Meaning, so there was a kinyan. I mean, there was a sale, there was a purchase. I sold my labor for 10 hours for $100. So now I'm entitled to receive the $100. The Balabais, he's entitled to have me work, but I'm already cornered the $100. I already own it. So there's a strong presumption in favor of my getting the $100. I breached, and now the Balabais is going to have to incur costs to finish the work. Well, how much is that worth? What are his damages because of my breach? What are his damages? Assuming the price of labor goes down.
$40.
So I get the full value of the sale, the full value of the king in my $100, less the value of the Nezek, the $40 that he has to expend to finish the job. Right? Cole, maybe just put yourself on mute because we're getting some weird. We're getting some weird feedback from like your heart monitor.
Sonar, it's really just.
Yeah.
Cole's sending out sonar.
It's not totally accurate.
Cole, can you just put yourself on mute? He'll be in like flatline just now or something. No. Leave his pre-meds. He found it funny. He was beeping. We heard him.
We
heard him. No, I think he's been released. He's been released.
He's released.
We heard Cole's beeping, and it sounded like.
Okay, I was gonna say if he's still in there.
What's this now?
What's that, Cole?
What do you want to say about me?
Well, we heard like a weird beeping noise coming from your phone.
Ah, yeah. If I told you about that, I'd have to kill you.
Okay, good. You know. Just deal with the Ukraine thing for us.
Exactly.
Okay.
He's
going to come on. Well, yeah. Right. So you see the view. So I think the Mesiva says, I think this is exactly right, that the Ksosis theory is based off of Gufo Konoi theory. And therefore, once he's sold, once the Mechira happens, the Poel is entitled fully to the full value of his compensation. You just got to pay off whatever damages result from it. Think of it as like a sale of a house. If I sell Yoni a house for $1 million and the furnace is broken, so I get my $1 million minus the costs of, let's say, replacing the furnace. That's what's going on here with Poel. The shop disagrees. The shop thinks there's no kinyan. There's no real ownership. There's no real purchase. There's no sale. So the only thing a Poel is entitled to is the value of the labor that he produces for the Balabais. So it's conceptually very distinct grounds for the Poel's compensation, and also conceptually very distinct views about the kind of kinyan that the Balabais has in the Poel, the Balabais-Poel relationship. Is that clear to everybody? Yeah? I think it's a very nice way of fleshing out machlokes. And then the Sivas is right, as Yair pointed out, that this is really the shock of the Shitaso, that there's no kinyan when it comes to Sefiras Poel and Yoni.
Well, it's not entirely accurate, though, because
the reverse case, let's say the worth goes up.
Yeah.
Right, let's say instead of being worth $8 an hour, now it's $15 an hour.
Sure.
Right, so the Schopenhauer postulate, and so presumably agreed with the postulate consistently at Schopenhauer, that you would get not the work, if you follow the same model.
Like, so it's going to be, you get the full value minus.
No, you wouldn't say that.
The cost of completion.
It's not without Schopenhauer postulate, and so then the five degrees, you get whatever the amount of work you did. You follow the Schopenhauer model, quantum merits.
Well, no, you would. Oh, you're saying, I mean, you're not liable for the.
Yeah, I did the Schopenhauer said.
Same Yadwal, how do you explain Yadwal Yon?
It's like the standard rule, the Schopenhauer's rule, is Kisa Dina Kosh Adabor, Shamin Lo Mashasa, Ben Hotel. And Rama said, Ben Hotel Lo Acha Oz. So you get whatever you want. That's like the standard rule. The Sot then says that this sounds like if it goes down, then you get like more. And the Shach says, like, no, it's agreed.
Right. That's true. And you're saying, what if it goes up?
But if it goes up, then you should also, like, everyone agrees, you still get.
You'd still get what?
You still get, like, how much work you did.
No, if it goes up.
Yeah, somebody will not shut us up, but no doubt.
I mean, you never get less than quantum merit.
Yeah, Yadu is always at least what you did. But
I'll so I don't think that's necessarily a problem for that. I don't think that's a problem for this at all. Because that just means that even if you're not going to collect qua the Kenyan, so you could argue, you could collect in the alternative for the benefit conferred.
Okay, but you're still doing the model. It's not always based on like Evan. If it was an Evan based.
Well, no. The rights. Well, there are two different principles at work, right? I mean, even if I wasn't a Pole, I'd be entitled to Kfi Mashenene, quantum merit. But qua Evan, qua Poel, I'm entitled to the Kenyan.
Uh-huh.
I think that's, yeah.
There
are two different mechanisms at play here. And the Shach's arguing, no, when it comes to that pool, there's only one mechanism. Mm-hmm. Because there's no kinyan.
So I think someone himself doesn't take a stronger view on the evidence.
Could be.
Pushing a more stronger evidence position than Xoid.
It's possible. It's possible. But I think this is, I think maybe it's the Nesivis really doing it more than the Xoids, right? I think it's the Nesivis doing it. So just to be clear, the Nesivis. Sorry, the Ktos is appealing to the idea of Giron Kesef, right? Then I have a question I want to throw back at you guys. So here, so the Ktos, sorry, the Ktos appeals to the idea of Giron Kesef, that when it comes to an Eved who sold, let's say, for 6 years for 100 grand a year, for 600,000 for the whole Avdus, and the Eved wants to redeem himself, he wants to buy out the rest of the term midway, let's say at 3 years in, how much does he have to pay? So in Giron Kesef, you pay the present market rate for the rest of your avdus, right? Yair? Does that sound right to you?
Yeah.
And so the Ktos is saying that's the paradigm that we're going to apply to Poel for the same reason of Gufo Kanui, right? Good? All right. Now, I want to throw a question back at you guys with respect to this analysis. So, the Nesivis, in the part that we prepared for today and Tuesday, so he says that, according to Rav, that there's no Kinyan, so when the Baal Bayis is Chozer, all he's got to pay is the damages, the dina de garmi, that Poel suffers from the backing out. Right? See that? So.
What are those damages that amount to?
So I think it would be like, suppose, Cole, you hire me to work for you at $10 an hour, and relying on, induced by your promise and our agreement, so I work, let's say, for, you know, half the term, and then you back out. But because I went to work for you at the beginning of the day, I lost an opportunity to find employment for the whole day elsewhere. So you are mazik me by inducing me to lose out on this alternative employment agreement.
And then what's the view that you would have to be compensated more than that?
So no, so he's saying the reason why you are to be compensated if there's no kinyan is based off Dina Digarmi.
Right? Yeah.
So that just touches on what we saw at the very beginning of the year. That's above a comma kind of a liability. Right? So the contract is The agreement between the Baal HaBayis and the Poel is just a hechatimtzi of inducement to trigger a nezikin claim for the Eved to collect compensation because he was harmed by the Baal HaBayis. Right? And then the Nesiva says, V'lchein eino tzarich l'shalim lo rak ma she'eziko. And for the same reason, if the Baal HaBayis was nenas, the Baal HaBayis wouldn't have to pay at all because ones is not chayav for dina d'garmi. All right? Is that clear to everybody? I know we spoke about this Tuesday. I just want to flesh out a little further. So that's true for Rav, who holds that there's no kinyan aguf. What about for the other view that holds there is a kinyan aguf? What's the basis for the Poel's entitlement to collect when the Baal HaBayis is chozer? The Nesivus doesn't connect the dots, as you can see. Right? But what do you think the contrast is, right? He says if there's no kinyan, then the Poel's right to collect is limited to whatever his entitlement is under Dina Degarmi. How much did he actually lose? Plus, or, right, slash, was it onus or was it not onus? And Laman Damar Yesh Kinyan.
If you're hired for a term, not for a not for performance.
And therefore what? What are you entitled to?
Therefore it's the same reason that an Eved in Ivri can get sick for 2 years out of his term and nothing happens to him.
That's right.
I think the unit is one of what?
I think that's right. Meaning if there's a Kinyan, then the Baal HaBayis is obligated to pay out the whole kinyan under the kinyan.
Right.
Right? So, look, take the class.
So the idea that you're... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you can say it, Cole. Go for it.
No. The idea that you're hired to pay according to the worker, according to what he provided for you, the idea there is based on performance. I got to get into a trap.
Yes, the what? What was that?
Get into a shrimp.
Oh, get into a shrimp. Oh my gosh. It's a daredevil. Okay. But I think the Nesivus is saying that if you hold Yesh Kinyan, then when the Baal HaBayis says Chozer, you're entitled to collect because that's what you're entitled to under the sale. You hear what I'm saying? Is that clear to everybody? Yeah, is that clear to you?
Yeah, I think so.
So what are the Nafkamina?
I mean, besides the value of what you're being paid.
Right, so the value is the clear nafkamina, right?
And the onus.
Well, and onus, right? The clear nafkamina between these different concepts. So there's a world of a difference whether when the Baal HaBayis is chozer. So let's say I employ Yoni and then I'm chozer on him b'emtzai Yoni. It could be that if Yoni would not have found employment elsewhere anyway, so I was the only employer hiring workers that day, meaning he lost nothing by relying on my promise, how much am I chayiv to reimburse him for backing out? Zero. You have no losses because you lost nothing by relying on my promise. So I'm not a mazik at all. But on a Kinyan theory that I agreed to pay you $100 for the day and I'm closer b'hentza, how much am I chayiv to pay you?
The full thing.
In principle, the full amount. Right? Like the full expectation.
Right, I gotta win for it twice.
That's right. But that's the idea of a Kinyan, right? That's the idea of a Kinyan, 100%. So you can see that there's a world of difference between whether you go in for a Kinyan view or a non-Kinyan view. That's gonna determine what kinds of compensation the Poel is entitled to in a case of breach. And that immediately...
Sorry, I have to get into a trap.
And that immediately brings to the foreground the question of, are you collecting under above a comma principle, which is what the Nesivus is saying you're collecting under if there is no kinyan, or are you collecting under above a mitzia kinyan principle? So you see, this comes full circle to the hakdama that we mentioned. Here's another nafkamina. Can you collect from Meitav? If you're collecting b'toras nezikin, arguably yes. If you're collecting b'toras akinin, arguably no. Okay? Any comments on this part of the analysis? All right. Good. So I think just the best way to think of the Kenyan view is to think of it as mamish a sale. If I sell Yoni a house for $1 million and it turns out that there's some small issue with the house, so the title already changed hands, Yoni gets the house, I get $1 million, and then we separately pay out damages for like small issues of misrepresentation, etc., etc. And that's what's going on according to the Sos in a case of Paul Shekhazar. See that? Yoni, is that helpful?
Yeah, no, I know.
Well?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, good.
I'm not sure that the Amic side exists, because the Vokali side exists, definitely with an Exodus.
What about within the Nesivis? So.
Well, the Nesivis are related stuff.
Right, so good. So
but he postulates against.
He doesn't like it, ultimately, but at least, I'm saying that's the conceptual view.
Right, I think the Zelfis obviously has a postulate.
Okay, that's. Right. How do you mean by Libra de Hilfus? Right.
Well, I especially like whatever. It's like Russian, but like he's making it so it's a strong man.
Right. Well, we're interested right now in just the paradigm. I think this is what follows from the Kenyan view. And I think there definitely is a tension out there whether it's Kenyan or no Kenyan. Right, we've seen that already in several. We saw the Rambam about Ona because it's like Neved, so there's no Ona. Right. We saw the Marams. Certainly, Maram held us at some point at least. Right, we saw the Maritz, so there is a whole Kenyan view out there.
Yeah, especially the Kenyan.
How stark is it? Correct.
It's like stark presentation of the Sivos.
Correct.
Suggesting.
Correct. Do you guys hear me despite my voice like cracking up on me? Right. Well, okay. It's either the drilling or my voice. You know, it's probably because I was trying to scream over the drilling of that. I lost it. All right. Okay, so now we move into a bit of a different. Obviously very much related to what we've seen until now, but a subsection within our analysis. So until now, we've been assuming, or at least the way I've set it up, is that there are these two paradigmatic views. There's the Kenyan view, which conceives of the Poel Baal Bayis relationship in terms of transfer of property, transfer of title, ownership, and then there's the contract view, which views it more as an agreement. Right, a looser agreement, and the compensation is based on quantum merit. Some principle like that. And we've seen like several nafkamina to different views. Again, like the Ona question, can he be Yotze below Mechila question. Just now, the remedy in case of a breach question, and the like. What I want to point out now is that there's a whole school of thought in the Achronim that goes in for an in-between view that doesn't look to the extreme of Poel gufo kanui, like an eved that he's owned by his master, yad poel ki yad balabais. But they don't want to go for the other extreme that says that all there is an agreement without a kinyan. And so what do they say in between? What's the view? Or what's the paradigm for the view? Anybody know? Yeah, so it's kinyan aguf leperosav. Right, that's clearly the paradigm that these achronim are going to appeal to. Now, it's an in-between view because they're not saying it's a full Kenyan aguf, but as between the contract theory and the Kenyan theory, the Kenyan aguf leperosav seems to lean more into which theory?
More of the
side. More of the Kenyan side.
Yeah, the Kenyan side.
Right? I think it's a subset of Kenyan, albeit a more limited sense of Kenyan. I think that's exactly right. So it's in between, but I think it's more related to the Kenyan. Although I think some Achronim have a little... They're a little confused about what exactly they mean by it.
And it might make you feel better about the Eben Elohim Abadim.
What?
It makes you feel better about the Beis Abadim Abadim.
If there's a Kenyan.
No, because it's only Kenyan on the Perota.
Right, so you're not really in violation of any.
Well,
remember, it's not only a Kenyan on Perosav. It's a Kenyan on Guf, Liperosav. Right, so they're not the Rishonim don't think that the Achronim don't think you could have a real Kenyan just on Perosav. It's got to be reified, like in Rem in some way, right? You have to have some claim in his guf, lip Perosav. That's why they have to say it. I think a Kenyan Lipherosov is like 2 weeks already. It's not a legitimate enough of a Kenyan.
Well, that's only the problem is that Kenyan Lipherosov is like a Kenyan Shilobagora.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's not possible. Right?
Can we zoom in for a minute? We just been like this background I'm not familiar with. What does it mean when I say there's a Kenyan Indigo Lipherosov? How is that different from a service?
How's it different from a service? So I could sell you this tree with respect to the fruits that it's going to grow.
Okay. So what does that mean?
Well, it sounds like you have an ownership interest. I could tell you the branch without telling you the tree, right?
Yeah.
And I could sell you half the tree without telling you the full tree.
Right.
So the Gemara thinks it's conceptually consistent to say that I can sell you the tree with respect to its fruits.
That's where I lose you. What does that mean? It's like there's no thing I'm selling you. I can't remove it. I can't. It's like buying the wool of an animal. Like I'm not buying the whole animal. I'm not buying the whole cow. I don't own like dough. It's no.
But I own that.
Yeah, but I can point to the wool and I own anything that's in the wool or ever will go into the wool. I own that.
Right, because there's a thing on the wall that I'm pointing at, but there's no thing on the tree.
Yeah, there's fucking abilities.
It's a good question. You're pushing things
related to the production of fruits.
Right, does it mean I buy the cells in the tree that will later end up in the fruits?
I mean, if we're going to try placing this middle case between the Kenyan Hogos paradigm and the service
paradigm,
I need to understand it better.
Correct. So, you know, Ray Blythe has this, silly article where he says, I'll send it out. You can read it oriented. It's called The Metaphysics of Kenyan. And what he basically says is that, you know, in non-Jewish law, you could own anything. You could sell anything. But obviously, halacha has all these limitations, right? Davar shelo b'li olam, you can't sell a davar shein b'reshuso, etc., etc. So he has this somewhat wonky idea that we should conceive of Kenyan and halacha as a tentacle. So it's like, to own things, imagine that I have like all these like octopus-like tentacles coming out of my back, and like they latch on to the things that I own. So it's like I own my car, so there's like a metaphysical tentacle coming out of my back, and it's like connected to my car in the parking lot of the SEPTA station in Philly. And the same for like all the stuff that I own. Now, it's kind of silly because like what does that explain, right? And his point is that you can't own things that the tentacle can't attach to. So it's like, if it's an intangible, then there's nothing for the tentacle to attach to, so it can't be owned. Now, I think there are a lot of problems with the view. We could read through the article and try to work through the theory and point out where it may go astray. So what would he say? What would he say in a Deca Lipherosov? Right. So is it just sufficient that the tentacle attaches to the tree? Is that the idea? Right. But I don't own the tree, so why is that relevant? Right.
Not the word.
It's kind of what you're saying.
I don't know what it means. I don't know how it's distinct from an obligation to give you the fruits once they grow.
Okay. Well, here's one distinction. A la the Kovet Shurim, it means that you don't have just a mere duty to give them to me. They're mine. They're mine from the moment that they grow. They're already sold and transferred. It's not just a claim right that I have against you. And I have a power right now to transfer it to a third party, arguably.
I think
what you're trying to say is like, look, is this just a game, right? Like conceptually, if you can't,
I would never accuse Lumpus of being a game. I want that going in the recording too.
Well, okay, right. But is that the point you're trying to make though, or?
Right. Meaning, did we just decide there's this thing called a kinyan so that we can have these nafkaminas in a way that's useful to us?
So let me get your points. Make your point more precisely then. So are you just asking, what's the difference between a kinyan negof leperosav and a mere agreement? Because I just gave you a few nafkamina.
You gave me nafkaminas, but you didn't understand
understand. I don't understand how. What did I do to generate these nafkamiras in this way?
Well, you own. Right, you have an ownership interest in the tree, which is distinct from entering into an agreement with somebody, which obligates him to provide you with stuff from the tree. Right? Although I'm sympathetic to the claim that, like, a kinyan haguf leperosav sounds awfully similar to just, like, a mere, like, contractual obligation. Right? Yoni, you had thoughts on this?
Well, if you cut down the tree right now, right? So if it's just like a mere contractual obligation, there might not be a real damage, or if the tree gets burnt or whatever it is, like who gets the insurance money?
Yeah.
So like there might not be any contractual obligation, you own like the payroll company. But if you own the tree itself, so like, I don't know, you can own the tree in different ways. Like you can own the tree because like it's a shade. You can own the tree because it's beneficial to the ground. You can own the tree because you like the bark.
Yeah, I think that's right.
It's not like, so I don't think it's so great if you own a tree, you know, if there are some properties of the tree.
Yeah.
It's like owning, if it was a cow, if you could own a cow, it got to be harisha for plowing abilities. You can also own the cow for milking abilities. You can own the cow for different, you know.
So isn't it, owning a cow, the gabi harisha, is already, it's tricky, right? But.
Well, it's like for any work you would do or anything you would produce. Like, oh, better yet, you can own a cow for a species, for the...
Right.
For the
but I think what Yair is saying is, where do you draw the line then? So can you just reinterpret all shibudim in terms of a kinyan, li'inyan, X, Y, or Z? Is that kind of what you're saying? In which case, the conceptual distinction doesn't really withstand scrutiny. Is that what you're getting at, or...?
I'm not sure. I don't want to say that's the line.
Okay. Because you don't want to impugn the integrity of lumber.
I don't think Itamar, I don't think you could just convert shibudim into kinyanim.
Right. I agree. Especially with Rabbi Chanan, right?
Sorry. Maybe I didn't understand. There's also that famous comment of Rabbi Tom about the difference between a ship of goat and a shibud mum, about how you have a right to repay a loan to the person who,
yeah,
person who gave a loan has the right to have it repaid to them. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, but that's, I mean, those are two kinds of shibudim. That's a shibud aguf and a shibud mamon. That's distinct from we're distinguishing between a kinyan and a shibud. Right? Those are two species of shibud.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm saying that I think kinyan is necessarily strong.
Yeah, kinyan is stronger, right? So that's the Rebbe Chanan that we saw on Tuesday, where he says that if you have a kinyan in something, you automatically, right, you own it right now. If you have a shibud, you have a future right to collect it. So, right, a shibud just...
Ew.
Yeah. A shibud is like a Hofeldian claim right, whereas a kinyan is like real bona fide ownership. Okay. So... I want to point out the move that these achronim make is to move from talking about kinyan haguf, evidavri gufo kanoi, to this lesser form of a kinyan, which is kinyan haguf leperosa. So the first achron that, or one of the first achron that we'll see here that mentions this is based off Yoni Sahara, who brought this to our attention. So it's the Imre Baruch and Simon Shin Lamed Gimel. The background doesn't quite matter. He's just pointing out the Maram sees Poel in terms of a Kal V'chomer from an Eved Ivri. If it's a Kal V'chomer from Eved Ivri, then it can't be identical to an Eved Ivri. So the Imre Baruch argues that, according to the Maharam, quote, Eved Ivri kol gufo kanye or kinuya liha adam. Aval Poel eno kanoi, Rak de gufo nishtabed lasos hamalacha shekibel alav lasos tabalabayis. Ul inyan ze have kikinyan begufo. So, what do you think of the Imre Baruch? So, an Eved Ivri is kol gufo kanuya la adon. The poel is not kanui, he's just mishubad. And Meshubad, Le'inyan Zeh, Meshubad Lasos Malacha, is equivalent to being Knuya Begufo Inyan Malacha. What do you think he's saying?
I think it's too weak for that Gomorrah.
Yeah.
I think it's much weaker. It sounds like it's.
That's right.
It sounds closer to the Sheep with Malacha.
Okay, good.
Like a strong Sheep with
Malacha. Maybe. Yeah, so I agree with Yoni here. I mean, just put your objection, or put the issue more precisely. What's the problem here with Imre Baruch?
Well, he's supposedly saying it's a Sheep root, he's not saying it's a Kinyan.
That's right. Right, I mean, we already saw this issue with the Baharit against the Radvaz about how you use the term Shibud versus Kinyan. The Imre Baruch is like conflating the two, right? He says that Poel is Eino Kanoi. He merely has a duty, right? Gufo Nishtabed Lasos Hamalacha. But then he says, oh, but since he has a duty, he's basically Kikanoi Begufo Le'inyan Malacha. Right, so if you ask me, and he's contrasting that with the Eved Ivri, whose kol gufo is kenuya l'adam.
Well, I think that's basically that should be clear. That she's saying that
just a sheep. Right?
The Maharam when Maharam says kinyan, he actually doesn't mean kinyan. He just means sheep.
Hey Ben.
And that he's like the chafa dimyon here is like very weak.
Ah, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. The chafa dimyon is very weak. Really, he just means it's a kind of a shibud.
Yeah, that's what he's exactly saying, but not a Kinyan.
Okay, but what throws me off here is that A, he does say that he's Kikonoi Begufo.
Well, he has to explain why the Maharal is mentioning it.
Okay. But also what throws me off then is that he says the contrast to the Eved Ivri is that the Eved Ivri is Kol Gufo Kinuya Lo Adon, which suggests that the Poel is Mikzas Gufo Kinuya Lo Adon. Right? He's Kanoi Lenin Malachta or something. So it's just very difficult, right? We're trying to figure out in this Imre Baruch, is he going in for a Kenyan view, a Shibud view, and where exactly the Kenyan Hagufa Perosa factors in. Minyara, what do you think?
If you're going to offer this as an explanation of the Maharam, then I want to read him as closer to Google Maharam.
Right.
But then again, there are gods also trying to turn the Maharam into a
right.
God and the kind of verse. I don't know, maybe the Maharam's trying to do the same thing.
Right. Right. But certainly the phrases here are very misleading, right? He starts off with saying, oh, the Eved Ivri is Kol Gufo Kanoi Lo Adon. That's meant to contrast, presumably, with the Poel, who's, you know, Mikzas Gufo Kanoi Lo Adon. Then he dilutes it to say, oh, but all it is just a mere Shibud, right? A Poel is not Kanoi. He just says a Shibud Aguf, Lasos Malacha. But then he turns around the other way and says, oh, and because he's a Shibud Aguf and he's Malacha, it's as if he's Kanoi Begufo. It's very, very confusing circumlocution.
It seems like Imre Baruch is just trying to fit his Shibud theory into the Maharam's Kinyan Lashon. He's apologizing for the Maharam's usage of the word Kinyan.
Yeah.
But really, he believes he's a Shibud. That's
So he's a Shibud man, and he's just trying to fit Shibud into Kinyan language, right?
Well, he feels some sense of loyalty to the Maharam.
Right.
Maintain the Maharam.
He's constrained by the Maharam's terms, but he's trying to make them make sense. That's the... But then by the... Yeah, I guess so. But I think the Kol Gufo Kenuya Lo Adon is still a bit of a forced formulation. Right. But I hear the suggestion. Now, I think the Achron, who's almost the clearest on taking this middle view, that the Poel is like Kanoi Begufo... Limilachta or Lipeirosav is the Nachlas David. The Nachlas David is Talmud for Pchaim Pelajner. So in Bav Metzia Daf Yud. So did anybody get a chance to see the Nachlas David? Yeah, Yoni, you saw it.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about the Nachlas David. What's his issue?
Well, his problem is that he's addressing a social question on the study
text. Yeah.
Basically, it's clear about whether or not Eved Ivri is a kind of.
Correct.
Because the Gemara in the Tosafot text has Shmuel's view that Eved Ivri is not Gufo Kanoi, and that's why if a person sends an animal to a borrower, which is Eved, so it's not considered as the person himself sent it, as if a third party sent it.
Yeah, so he has two Gemaras, one in Bava Metzia Tzadi Tes, one in Bava Metzia Tzadi Tes. Right? One of the Gemaras says that If I ask Yoni to lend me something, and Yoni sends it to me with his Eved Kanani, so then it's considered to be in Yoni's Asrayas until it gets to me. Because he's sending it with his Eved Kanani, and Yada Eved Kiyad Rabo, so the thing that I'm trying to borrow doesn't change possessions until it actually gets to me. Right? But the Gemara said that that's not true when it comes to an Eved Ivri. If Yoni were to send it to me with his Eved Ivri, it's already considered to be Yotze from Yoni's Achrayas the moment he gives it to his Eved Ivri. And it's Nichnas into my Achrayas from that moment. Because Yad Eved Ivri is not Kiyad Rabo. That's the Gemara on Tzadi Tes, correct?
Yeah.
And then similarly on Daf Tzadi Ba, the Gemara talks about with respect to Shela Bebailim. Remember that you can't have liability as a Shomer if the Bailim is working, if the owner of the object is with you, either legally or physically, while you're using his object. Is everybody familiar with Shela Bebailim as a principle? Okay, are you familiar with Shela Bebailim? Well, so Shela Bebailim is just that. So if you give me something to watch, I could be liable if it gets destroyed, right? But the Gemara says that if you are working with me and I'm watching your object, Bailavimo. That's the shape of the violin. You're right, Bailavimo is a more general term. Shale would be a subset with respect to Shoah. So on Daf Tzadi Bava, the Gemara asks, what if when I rent Yoni's car, I also rent his driver? Is Eved Kanani driver. So if you say Yad Eved Kiyad Rabo, then it's as if it's a Shmir Abibailim, Bailavimo. But if his driver is just an Eved Ivri, then it's not Bailavimo, because Yad Eved is Yad is Lav Kiyad Rabo. That's not Ben, is that? You with us?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So this is a problem, right? Because all these Gemaras seem to suggest that Eved Ivri is not Tanoi, and yet the Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Yud seems to suggest, at least with respect to Magbia Metzia at one point, that an Eved Ivri, you know, is Gufo Panoi, and that Yad Poel is Kiyad Halavais. So how do you...
Gemara in Kiddushin explicitly says that Gufo Panoi.
Right, Gemara in Tazayin. Zosamer is Eved Ivri Gufo Panoi, and he's not Yotze without a Get Shichur. He's not Yotze Bepet in Chila. So,
you know, the example also quoted earlier in the Ramban, there's the Mitzia, the
Sashani. Correct. Yeah, all those Gemaras and Erevin.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you navigate the tension? So what does the Nachas Avid want to say? Yoni?
That...
Here's this paragraph. In Kein Lechora.
That, I mean, read it.
Well, it's the Zeinu Kasha. So here's the answer. Yeah. You can say it outside. First.
Secondly, he says that he's not really owned. He can't own the Eved, and that's why he's not actually there. But he is owned Legabe Malacha.
Yeah.
So Legabe Malacha, that's where you own the Eved, and that's why you can't sell that Shibur, because you can't be both on that. But with regard to the, whether the owner is actually there present, and with regard to Sheila and Balavimo, those things, you don't actually own the person, so it's not actually your possession.
Yeah. So he wants to say we have to distinguish between two different dinim, or two different conceptions of Gufo Kanoi, right? So one conception is, and here's his phrase, Le'inyan sheyiye ha'eved kibal habayis legamri. See that phrase? Meaning, do we view the Eved as being the Bal Habayis, such that chashvinan leguf ha'eved Kiguf bal habayis, uchilu haya bal habayis atzmo ima b'machto. Now, he thinks that idea of seeing the guf ha'eved kiguf bal habayis, that's what holds true for Eved Kanani, and that's what's required for Bail of Imo and for Achraya Shomrim. Right? meaning in order for the object to still be considered to be in Yoni's Rishus of the Mafkid, he had to have had send it with his Eved Kanani, who's considered to be like his Guf. And therefore the object never left his domain. Okay? Whereas when it comes to Poel, what's his phrase? When we talk about Evidiri Gufo Kanui, we don't mean that his Guf is Kiguf Balabayas, because that's not true. What we just mean is Le'inyan Revach Melachto. Right, with respect to the productive labor of the Poel. And notice, Kiman Dechol Ikar Kinyano Shel Eved Ivri Hulim Lachto, the whole reason why you're acquiring a Poel or an Eved Ivri is for his labor. V'azeh Shapir Yesh Kinyan L'Rabo Gam L'Gufo. There's a Kinyan Haguf with respect to his productive labor. Rotsa Lomar, Dekon Hagufo L'Inyan Sheha Melacha Shehu Oseh Yeshayach L'Bal Abayis. Now,
what about the Kinyan Isser?
So he doesn't mention anything about a Kinyan Isser here. But he's saying just with respect to the Kinyan.
That's a glaring omission.
Yeah, but he doesn't need to get with, even for a poll where there's no Kinyan Isser, he wants to say, look, there's a Kinyan Haguf L'Inyan Melachto. Right? That's the
Kinyan. That
was Yair's point. What does it mean to have a Kinyan Haguf L'Inyan Melachto, right? But you see that Nachas David is clearly.
Yeah.
And the Nachas David is clearly going in for that view. So I just wanted to take a step back for a second within the Nachas David and ask, what do you guys think of his conception of Gufo Kanui of Eved Kanani? I mean, look how he explains the concept of Gufo Kanui for Eved Kanani versus Gufo Kanui for Apollo. Leave you. I need them to strike you strange, or
the first one was Kanani.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's what? Like,
okay, but you might think that just means that, right?
But I'm getting caught, but like, it's as though he himself is with you.
Right, it's almost strange, right? It's strange, right? It's peculiar. It's
strange.
Yeah, it's intrinsically strange. Why would you think that Gufo Kanui would suggest that his goof is Kiguf Palabayas?
Well, because
that's what Gemara
says.
Tani Zion,
Tani Ten. So we know.
Does Gemara say that?
Or that's how Shilbat implies
that he's with you. Well, I think the idea is that
and we certainly wouldn't say, you know, if you're in the field and, like, the owner's cow is with you, even though you have a full, complete kinyan in the cow, it can't be that it's as though he's with you.
Right, right. I guess I would say more just in terms of responsibility. Like, if his Eved is there, then maybe the Eved has responsibility. I guess we have to take a closer look at the sugya to speak intelligently about it. But I don't know, it seems strange to me to think that Gufo Kanui is going to talk about as Kiguf Balabayas. That's never what you're trying to capture in an idea of Gufo Kanui.
Well, in this case, it is, though. I think I have no more points. With regard to Sheila and Kimo Balakha, I think the whole point is whether or not the Balabayas is present. And then every Kanani there means that the every Kanani, if he was, is
I don't know. I mean, I think that's partially what the Gemara is trying to figure out there. The Gemara even talks about Shluch Shem Kemoso. If you take a look at the Sugya on Tzadivav.
Okay.
So I guess we have to take a closer look at that sugya to see whether it's the case that the standard is that the Bala Bais himself has to be as if he's here.
Right. If this should be off the count, then certainly you have to argue that is mamish like the Bala Bais in order for that to work.
Yeah, or you might say that no, it's like he's the extension of the, he's like the Bala. I hear what you're saying though.
Right. But it could be that those of you are like Kabbalah, Talia, and Gemara.
Right. Well, I guess what's concerning to me is that you don't think that there's anything built into the notion of gufo kanui. So if my guf is kanui to yoni, there's no reason why the property right should imply anything about the ontological identity. Right? That's what's troubling me. How do you get from the concept of kanui to Chashvina and Gufo ke Guf Bala Bais? Like, where does that? Where do you get the metaphysical identity from the property relationship?
Tentacles.
Well, tentacles. Right. Maybe the right blank article is the answer. That's right. Maybe.
I think you're answering the question of the Shayla question. Well, how do you explain that?
So it's just tailored around that issue.
Sounds like it. That's his motivation. He takes a very strong read in that case.
Possibly. Makes me uncomfortable. I'll say maybe what's underlying it is like a general theory of property. Remember we saw the Rav Hirsch last year about why you're chayiv for Ben. You remember this? Why you're chayiv for your mama Jehizik, Rav Hirsch?
Because the animal's part of the moral sort of universe.
No, not that one. Right, that was our Ramban. Rav Hirsch. You're conflating one wonky shita with another.
Yeah.
Although I think the Rav Hirsch is less wonky than the Ramban. Remember what he said?
Rav Hirsch said that there's like some extension of the ownership in the animal itself. The animal.
Not extension of the ownership, that mamono shel adam is gufo hamurchav.
Yeah, it's like some like
Right, well, not just tentacles, that a person's property is their extended person, it's their extended body. Yair, you hear that?
I mean, that sounds like a
play.
It's very similar.
I mean, the tentacle view.
Yeah. Like
right, but I guess...
Something there.
But here, I think it's even stronger, right? Because it's saying not just that it's connected to you, but it's your extended person. Right? And maybe that's what's going on in the Nachas David here. That's why he thinks, if you're... The more kanui, the more there's mamish akinin a guf in the Eved, the more he's like gufa amurchav of the Baila. So maybe it's that underlying theory of property that the Nachas David has in mind... to make the move from Gufo Kanoi to Chashvinan Gufa Eved ki Guf Bala Bais. Now all that is in contrast to the Eved Ivri and the Poel, where he says with respect, we're not going to say Gufo Kanoi to be ki Guf Rabo. Rather it's a lower level, which is just that L'inyan Revach Melacha Yesh kinyan l'rabo gam begufa. And as he says explicitly, it's a kinyan haguf l'inyan ha-malacha shehuosa. Which is a very nice way of talking about this. Kinyan haguf l'peirosa. Now, there's one lingering question that I have here in the Nachlas David. So remember what the Nachlas David is trying to explain? He's trying to explain the Gemara in Kedushin, Tezayin. How could you hold Eved Ivri Gufo Kanoi if there's all this evidence to the contrary? Correct? So, what's his answer? His answer is that Gufo Kanoi is only with respect to
Malacha.
So how does that bear on the discussion in Kedushin Tezayin, which talks about needing a Shtar Shichror and not sufficing with a mere Mechilas Dvarim? Right, he says, well, why should Gufo Kanoi be, why should Gufo be Kanoi le'inyan Giron Kesef, but not le'inyan Shardvar? And he says, because he's Kanoi le'mlachto only. But why should a Kinyan ha'guf le'mlachto be the decisive factor in terms of requiring a get shichrur and not sufficing with mere mechila. Anybody have an answer to that?
He just kind of like puts it back in the same category as the Tosafot. It's just like a rhetorical move.
Right. I mean,
he doesn't really explain anything. Just,
right. He doesn't. That's my point.
He
right.
He said that's what Tosafot says. So like, it must be what Tosafot makes his chiluk the same chiluk as what he reads.
Well, he says l'fimasha kasavnu nicha. Because devemes l'shari dvarim ein gufo kanoi. It's only l'inyan malachta that gufo's kanoi. He's using that to explain why you require star shichur. But what's the relationship between being kanoi l'malachta and requiring a get shichur?
No, you just sound like, oh, they're
kanoi. Right. It's igor chasam and asefer in terms of cashing out his distinction vis-a-vis the explanandum, right, the thing that has to be explained. Cole will get some nachas from explanandums. Cole, is that right?
Good word.
Okay. So, okay, everybody with me on the issue in the nachas David? Yeah?
It's not the main suya that he's trying to explain. Like, he's basing himself on the potency, he's trying to resolve the sira within.
Right, so I think he has like a solid explanation for yad poel ki yad balabayis.
Right.
But he does want to say this is Hainu Damrina Bikidusha. Right?
Where do we have that?
So the last paragraph on page 12, you can see over here.
Okay, right. Mine.
Right, and he's trying to use his distinction to explain Tosa's distinction.
He just like says, like, oh, these categories are exactly equivalent.
Right. He's saying, here's the explanatory power of my theory. Right? It explains why he's Kanoi Le'inyan Get Shichur. But he doesn't make the connection between Gufo Kanoi Le'inyan Malachto and Get Shichur, which is a problem. Okay, good. So we have two formulations. I think you guys are right that the Imre Baruch is really a Shibud guy, not a Kinyan guy, even though he's trying to sell us Shibud in terms of Kinyan. Nachas David is a real Kinyan Aguf L'Hinyan Malachta person, right? Even though there are some kinks in his theory as well. And it's strange that he's contrasting that with the Kinyan Aguf of an Eved Kanani, who's considered to be Kiguf Rabbo Mamish. The next shita that's squarely within this camp of Kinyan Aguf L'Malachto is the Or Sameach. So what does the Or Sameach say? What's his interest over here? So he's trying to figure out why Master owns Yad Poel Ki Yad Balabayis, but basically Yad Ame Ivriya is not Ki Yad Bailo. So why is it that a poel's productive labor goes to his master, but not an ame ivriya's? Right? Like mitziyasa is la via. So what does he say? Okay, so he does say that the way yad poel ki yad balabayis works in b'mitziyah daf yud, you can see here, is Ki'ilu hikne yado l'maisa yadav ulemitziyosav. Okay. Dekiva demaisa yadav mitziyosav al yede yadav ka'asu matzi mizake l'rabo guf yadav l'mitziyosav. Explicitly, kideka l'perosav. So he's explicit about this analogy and that's the way the Poel Balabayas relationship works. But he says that cannot apply, given that that's the nature of the Poel-Balabayas relationship, it can't apply to Ama Ivriya. Why?
She's a Ketana.
She's a Ketana, and therefore?
Therefore, Messias Ketana and Messias Ketana are not either a bond on there, either way, and therefore she can't be covered
with
someone else.
So,
therefore, you can't sell that over.
Okay, so, so put it more sharply. So why... Why is Yad Ami Ivriya not Kiyad Baila? Or Kiyad Adona?
Because there is no Yad Ami Ivriya. There's only the Yid.
Okay.
There's no actual...
So is it that there's no Yad?
There's no Yad Ami Ivriya. Whatever thing you are purchasing, that you don't have, it doesn't exist.
Does he say that?
His version is more than one ability to sell over that yad.
Yes. Right? Notice, he doesn't just say, oh, there's no yad. So there's nothing, there's no object to be sold, to be transferred. It sounds like he wants to say that a gadol is a bar zechia. And since he's a bar zechia, since he has acquisition powers, so he could, he has the power to transfer his acquisition power. Right? You have to have a power of acquisition to have the power to transfer your acquisition powers. But a katan, he says, who's la bar zechia b'metzios, and in principle they can't, they don't have this power of acquisition. So, right, it's not a zechus atzmi beguf hayad, dilahave shayech la knuye guf hayad l'metziosav. Kivan do inyan takana, it's just a takana midrabana, and that they get to keep the things they find. And then he says, it's dami lemilsa da'asi me'alma, velo shayich lahaknos beguf hayadayim. So what's he saying?
I mean, it maybe sounds like there's no ability to sell it, but it sounds like they're streaming to sell. It should say nothing to sell. The other one is explicit, and cross like the lahaknos yadayim. There's no ability.
Right. So like he keeps focusing on the ability,
yeah,
right?
The logic argument is that there's nothing to sell. Since she doesn't actually... Like, the fact that she gets it is itself a counter-bottom. There's no actual ability there.
Right. There's no yad to be sold.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the...
I think that's right.
That's what he's trying to say.
Yeah.
Even though his language seems to suggest that...
Isn't that what he's getting at? Because, you know, it's a seeds.
Right. Well, I think what he's...
I don't know.
Intrinsic, right? So it's not intrinsic to the hand itself.
But it's not a right that exists, that, you know, is even, like, abstractly tangible. It's like, whenever a katana happens to find something, Chazal swoop in, grab it, give it to the bottom.
Right.
Yeah, they're on the elements. They feel like it came in out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But
it's not like an intrinsic power.
Yeah. Right.
It's not a power that adheres, but it's reified in the hand.
So there is no power.
Right. Well, here's another way of putting it. I think that point is, so there is something, there is a power to the yad. The power is through takonas chachamim. Right? So it's an external power, an artificial power. But the power doesn't inhere in the guf hayad itself. So coming back to Yair's point earlier, right, so saying, well, isn't this just an agreement? Right? Isn't a kinna guf leperosav just an agreement? And I'm saying no. The halacha is really just focused on the category of property right in the hand with respect to its acquisition powers. So here's a perfect nafkamina. In the end of the day, the bas, the amayivriya, can be kona things through a takanas chachamim. So maybe if it were just like an arrangement or something, then yes, she could agree to transfer those things to the third party. But the Or Sameach is saying that it's not biguf hayadayim. It's like an end result power that she has, but it's not a power that inheres in the yad. And so to have a kinin haguf l'peirosav, the power has to inhere, the power of the peiros has to be immanent within the guf itself. Whereas in this case, the power is external to the guf hayad.
Where does the power go?
Mikoach takana.
Is that a substantively different formulation than every time she picks something up, the rabbi scoop it and give it to the halakha?
No, I think that's right.
Okay, great.
That's exactly what it is. I'm talking about your earlier point about the is a kinyan aguf leperosav of a tree, like what's the kinyan in? And how is it different from a mere agreement?
Okay.
So you see the point of this Or Sameach.
It's not necessarily a
So I think what he's saying is that we're the fruits to be external to the tree. right? Meaning, were the tooth fairy to come every morning and plop fruits on the tree, the kone would not have been able to acquire it. Because it's not a kinyan guf le perosav. There's no power imminent in the guf le inyan perosav. So if it was mikoach takana, you can't be kone. It's only if it's intrinsic koach hayad, what he calls azuchus atzmi beguf hayad, then it's shayich laknuye guf hayad lemitziosav. See that? I think that's the crucial distinction here. So maybe it's a chiddush l'inyan trees and their peros, that, right? You think that the koach of fruit producing is imminent in the tree. It's a chiddush l'inyan productive labor that you think it's like imminent within the guf hayad, the powers of the person. But the Arsamech is arguing that's a necessary condition for being able to transfer guf l'perosav. I think it's a really, really interesting point. And he makes the same point about a shovach. If the kinyan of a shovach is only midrabanan, then you wouldn't be able to sell the afrochim and the beitzim that come about through it, because it's external to the guf hadavar.
It's not obvious that every tikkun chachamim needs to work that way. You could say that chachamim gave us this.
Right. I mean, they reactivated the latent powers of the yad.
Yeah, midrabanan, she does the koach.
Right. You could have said that. But I think he's taking this idea of a kinyan guf l'inyan perosa very seriously. Right, like in terms of the...
Right, I agree.
It can't be artificially concocted.
I can create a theory of like kinyan derabana that asserts that all kinyan derabana work in this way, and I would use that against that idea. That, you know, we need not say that.
Correct. If any of you have further thoughts on the Arsamech here, it's really a very, very powerful idea. Right. Remember again, the Arsamech is clear that you can't be makne the mitzios sheyimtze la'abaylim. You can't just sell the future mitzios that you will find, because that's a davar shlo b'liolam. Right? Rather, it's got to be a kinyan biyado limaisa yadav. And he takes this kinyan biyado very seriously, which precludes the yad ameivriya that only works with Torah's takanas hachamim.
Well, if you're a kohen adapter for the thing that you will later find,
yeah.
Because she does the end of the requirement.
I mean, once she's a gedola or something.
No, and in general, whether it's because she gets her own.
But it's not a koach biguf hayad.
Yeah, I'm saying if you thought that the.
Yes, correct.
If the kidney was only for the.
Extrinsic.
She acquires, it doesn't matter how she acquires it.
Correct.
She acquires it.
Correct, that's my point, right? If it was just an agreement.
Yeah.
But because it's working with Torah's like a kinyan bigufo, that's why it has to be an imminent power of the hand.
Yeah,
this is a very good way of fleshing it out. Cole or Gabe, any comments on the Arsamech?
No. I continue to find the legal language of our tradition hopelessly muddled.
Well, here, I don't think the language is muddled at all in the Arsamech. I mean, you guys think the language is muddled in the Arsamech? I don't see that at all. I think his categories are actually very precise and clear. Right? And that's actually why he draws this important distinction between kinyan beguf hayad and kinyan that's michus l'yad. Okay. Ben, what do you think? Tom, I know you.
No. I see what he's getting at. I wish the language of Arsamech was more
It sounds like you don't like the circumlocution. You don't like the concept of a kinyan guf l'inyan perosav.
Yeah, I guess that's what I don't like. I don't see what it gets to. I don't see what adding the whatever. This whole thing is in need of a purification. It needs to be put through an acid bath.
What do you say? This whole thing is a
purification. A ritual bath.
It needs to be put through an acid bath.
Okay, but I don't know. I think this is. I actually think this Arsamech is very nice and pretty clear. So let me just.
Point. Yeah.
So there's the Chiddushei Agra here in Bava Metzia. Yes.
And then you wouldn't, I don't know, the standard of priest, our understanding of it, that Katana owns things, Katana Sivana, is not so much about the fact that they own a real Nixia, but the process of how they got it was through
yeah.
But that their actual ownership is
correct.
Only through Durbana.
Right.
They don't actually own it. Saying it's not about the.
Yeah, it's a difficult question.
It's focusing on the process.
Correct.
The ownership is the same through Kenya at the end of the day.
I don't know if he's committed to saying that the kinyan is totally the same. He might be of the view that if the process is only midrabanan, then even there was that.
No, but if the kinyan itself wasn't the same, then the devar shloba olam is not like a clear cut.
I'm not sure if he's committed to the view that the output is a regular kinyan, or he acknowledges that also.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's the standard. Like,
yeah.
It's not so much about the process, it's just like
correct.
The actual.
The Chiyushe Grach and Bamitzias, these are the notorious ones. These are the ones that are supposedly like from stolen notebooks or something. And Dr. Grach wrote like a response to that these like stuff was forged and material was added in. But it's not going to stop me from quoting it here. But we could check the black book to see if it makes it into the real version.
It's on the same level as the
Piskei Kosha? What? No, I can't compare. So that here, the Yishkur Reb Chaim is saying, Shiny Pol Diado Kiyad Balabayas. The Prime says the Pshat is Mishum de Hapoel Nasa Ke'en Shovach Lebal Habayis Al Haperos. The Habal Habayis Kana Zechia Beguf Hapoel Le'inyan Maisa Yadav. So again, that phrase that there's a property right or a claim right Beguf Hapoel Le'inyan Maisa Yadav She'ia Mitzias Hapoel Lebal Habayis. Notice that phrase memela. That's like the Rabbi Chanan. Anything that the worker does automatically accrues to the balabayas. So you see, it's like a poel's labor is automatically the balabayas is right, and the same thing is applies to mitzia. You see, that's Rabbi Chaim seems to also be very clear that it's not a mere shibud. Right, because it's memela, it's automatic, and it's a zechus biguf hapoel in yad ma'asiyadav. So I think Reb Chaim is also squarely in this camp, kinyan aguf leperos. All right. So what this view seems to do is, I mean, so an interesting background question here is how far is the kinyan aguf leperos camp from the kinyan from the more robust kinyan aguf camp? What? Who?
It's sort of stuff I'm looking at. I don't see so much.
Yeah, Shaila Dabalim is an Afkamina. The Shaila Dabalim case and the Nachas David is an Afkamina. Maybe explanation of Avagibri is an Afkamina.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Orsa Meir. Yeah, the Amivria is another Afkamina. Right? I think they would be on the Mesivis and the Ktsos side, arguably, in the Poel Gufokanoi side. Right? Is that what you're trying to... When you say Nafkamina, Nafkamina against which Shita? Against the robust Kinyan Aguf Shita?
Yes.
And how are they different from that Shita?
Yeah.
So, I think that Yair's right. The Shela
B'Bailim...
Okay. We're going to stop in a second anyway. Shela B'Bailim is a Nafkamina. Who's Achrayus? You are
currently the only person in this conference.
How come we lost? Yeah, crazy. You know, I'm gonna hang up on them. Also. I'm not gonna be here by myself. I think that's clear enough, Kamina. Who has the Achrayus when the object is in the Eved's hands on its way to the Shomer? That's not enough, Kamina. And then this Amirvia is a great enough, Kamina. So for sure. And then you'll also see when we get to this discussion in the Rambam, which I'll have to pick up with on Thursday, that's also a huge nafkamina to this question. Okay? So basically what I wanted to just accomplish today is to point out there's this in-between view between kinyan on a full guf and the contract theory, which is the kinyan aguf leperosav. The Imre Baruch seems to go in one direction, more in the Shiba direction. The Nachas David and the Or Sameach have a more precise and a richer conception of the Kinyan Aguf Leperosav. I think we should be mindful of Ben's point and keep our eyes open for other nafkamina to this point. Okay? So we're going to pick up with this on, can we meet on Thursday right after Rosh Hashanah? I mean, 2 days after Rosh Hashanah, the day after Tzom Gedalia? Yeah, are you around? You're not here. Right. Okay, fine. So you're out then. Ben, are you around on that Thursday?
I could FaceTime him, though.
Yeah, Sarah Smith Shuba.
You can put me in, though.
Okay, great.